Aging. Some things do it well. Others do not. There's Something About Mary was the number one movie in America.
The number one movie in America.
Hello, my name's Sean Collier. I'm here with two Red Book reporters who sure didn't sign up for this. It's Camila Adams.
Hello.
And Robin Hitchcock.
Hi, welcome back.
Mommy Dearest was last time, 66 and a third, which is a pretty good score.
Yes.
That's the subjectivity is why we're here. We liked Mommy Dearest, notable, terrible movie. We liked it more than acclaimed films, including WALL-E, Gravity, A Christmas Story, Blazing Saddles, Pretty in Pink, and Top Gun. None of those had a score as good as Mommy Dearest. So, you know.
Top Gun. Wow.
Mm-hmm.
Top Gun is kind of garbage, everybody.
It is, but I mean, I thought that you two were held it like very fondly.
Oh, no. No. Understandable stereotype about white people, but right. No, not in this case.
But you're like super hyped about their new one, right?
That is true. Okay. The new one is better. Really good.
Okay.
It's really all right. Good.
So that's what I'm confusing that with.
Considerably better than the original. That guitar riff, though. That part's great. But what a subject we have this week. Let us not delay.
Mm-hmm.
A movie that, you know, I could go 2 years without thinking about.
Mm-hmm.
And yet was a giant deal. Mm-hmm. At the time. And now I'm angry that ever happened.
Yeah, you and me both. I don't, what the hell were we doing in 1998? Like,
I don't know.
Like, why was this movie so, why was this everybody's, I don't know, golden child comedy? Like, was this like one of the first times we're coming back to big box office comedies or?
No, there were a lot, you know, there was a lot going on.
Were we just really swinging hard off Ben Stiller's dick? Like, I don't.
I think people were really swinging hard off Cameron Diaz's pussy.
Okay.
Is part of it.
That's part of it. A Dumb and Dumber being a giant hit a couple of years earlier was part of it.
I do think the late 90s are, you know, as a comedy scholar.
For the listener, Robin pushed up invisible glasses.
The late 90s were definitely a time of outrage comedy, right? Like,
sure.
You know, like we did our Howard Stern episode, right? Like people were pushing boundaries, but in a, you know, if you think about like 80s comics pushing boundaries, it was always very like vulgar, right? Or socially taboo. And in the 90s, it was more like cringe embarrassment stuff.
Wow.
And gross out humor.
I guess so.
And stupid humor, like,
boy,
like
was it
the rise of Jim Carrey, right? Like, and I love Jim Carrey, just to be clear.
Right. It's kind of upsetting that that's Jim Carrey's legacy, sort of.
Well, I think that Jim Carrey's legacy will even out between dumb humor, desperate Oscar bait, and anti-vax nonsense.
He's a complicated man. You know, I know that we're, like, every time we, like, take a good hard look back at the turn of the millennium, we're like, ooh.
We messed up.
Like the Woodstock 99 documentary, right? Where we're like, oh, why were we furious and horny and just, like, rolling around in the mud at the end of this decade, you know?
This peaceful, prosperous decade.
Yeah.
Oof. Hate my cubicle.
Yeah, I guess that's what it. There's like a whole generation of us coming out. You know, we've graduated from high school. We've graduated from college, most of us at this point. Some of us getting closer to that fucking deep, dark cloud of for real adulthood. And we're like grasping on to the last straws of our childhood and, you know, just trying to be stupid and young and being able to have to make our mistakes, quote unquote. And, you know, because we were brought up by boomers.
Yeah.
Who
yeah.
you're supposed to have it figured out by now. Get your shit together.
Was it, is it just that, like, the culture realized we could get away with shit? Like, we had... like three levels of TV, like network, and then cable is a little bit more racy, and then premium cable, you can do whatever, we could do whatever we want on a television. Can we have sperm in a movie? Like, was it just like a decade of envelope pushing?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah.
And some of, right. you know, some of that, I have come on here and defended Jackass because I think Jackass right. is in the vaudeville tradition of physical comedy. Like there are ways in which I think that worked. I saw Korn in concert mostly accidentally and they were quite good. Like it's not to cast the entire decade aside or the entire 5-year period around this, but this movie sucks.
Oh boy, does it.
Like
I don't remember it sucking this hard.
I was no. also surprised, and I knew I was in for some rough road.
Yeah, like I remember I knew like come when we pulled it and I was like, okay, I know it's not going to age well at all,
right.
I'm sure there's going to be a lot of offensive stuff in here, but I wasn't expecting it to just be seriously. I laughed exactly one time watching this movie this time.
There are a few, like there's a few people have a few good line readings.
I don't.
That's it.
I know I saw it way back, like in 98, 99. I don't know why. I don't think I would have gone to the theater to see it. But, you know, again, it was probably just one of those things. I was probably on some guy's TV that I was dating or some bullshit like that. It's never really been something that I don't think I've ever watched it more than once. Other, you know, except for now, but
I remember watching it once. It wasn't in the theater. It was probably, you know, on cable. I mean, I know I saw like the uncensored film, so it was either on HBO or on demand, you know, maybe right. 5 or 6 years later. And at the time I was like, eh, that was fine. And I never thought about it again.
Right.
And now, Robin, your history.
Remember this coming out super clearly. This was, I think, the summer after movie camp. Like, I was, like, deep in it. Like, this was me beginning to, like, read every single word of Entertainment Weekly every week. You know what I mean? And also, I'm going to, like, spoiler the Faxi segment. I think that this movie had some kind of record along the lines of longest time to get to number one in many years.
It's not the longest, but yeah. This had a long, slow climb to number one.
Which was something that they covered in Entertainment Weekly right. at the time. And also, you know, I always watch movies with my dad, and like watching vulgar movies with your parents is like a weird thing.
That's absolutely memorable.
Yes.
It'll sear into your memory.
And I got... we're like probably too used to it, to be honest, but I do very clearly remember, like, because it made it into the ads before this was on VHS, like the fact that she has semen in her hair. And I remember, you know, at this time I had never encountered semen,
right?
And, I kind of remember like looking at my dad like
really
and it being like, no.
Let's move on.
Yes. Just like we had a whole conversation.
Not to repeat that conversation, but like watching it this time, I'm like, why did they think this is the most solid evidence that this is a movie for 15-year-old right. virgins?
It is for people who have never encountered semen.
Yeah. This is not a grown-up comic on any level.
It makes me feel like the is this the Farley brothers wrote this?
Yeah.
Yes. Including two-time Academy Award winner Peter Farrelly.
Yeah.
A phrase which played through my head over and over and over again.
It makes me think that, you know, you've never actually spoken to a woman. the way that Mary was written, or they just don't give a shit. Like, it's just, like, there's no way, even if she had thought that it was actually gel.
Which is dumb. That's not what right. hair gel looks like.
Right. No, ever, never. And which she wouldn't have left her hair looking like it was looking.
Wait, you can feel your hair enough.
To me, he says, where did it go? As if the product of your masturbation is one solid item, like right. a piece of chewed gum?
Right. That's a messy situation. Like, honestly, like,
it was good camera positioning to hold the reveal that was good. That long.
Yeah. I mean, they had to work for that.
Yes, but, and they got it.
But was it worth it?
No.
No. Let me tell you what happens in the movie.
We are so far ahead of ourselves.
Back in the day, Cool Babe Mary asks awkward Ted to the prom because he's base level nice, and this is a 90s comedy, so the standard for every character is horrible monster. They're about to go, but he zips his junk and ends up in the hospital blowing his night with Mary. Cut to 13 years later. Ted still pines over Mary, but she has relocated to Florida. Ted's doofus buddy Dom convinces Ted to hire a smarmy private investigator, Pat, to track Mary down. Pat does, but he falls for her. Despite Pat trying to convince him Mary is now bad news, Ted goes to Florida, nearly getting murdered by Harland 7-Minute Abs Williams on the way. That part was good. When he gets there, he finds Mary is successful, happy, and hanging out with the old lady from the Insidious movies. Also, she has about 6 guys pining after her because she's the only decent person in the universe of this movie. A series of uncomfortable events ensue. Mary learns that every man in her life is a lying jerk, but because Ted is slightly less of a lying jerk than the rest, they get together, and thankfully, someone shoots the terrible guitar player that has been hanging around the whole movie.
Okay, so many questions. Oh, one.
Literally locked down to not laugh through that because of the realization that that's where she knows Magda from.
Well, a scream queen, Lynn Shay.
Right? You were going so fast and so hard. I really did not want to interrupt you, but wow, that took all of my restraint.
Seriously. Oh, I had to restrain myself from noticing all of that going on in my periphery.
I am shocked that that's who Magda Magda was. I got a lot of fucking problems with the Magda character. Were the singer songwriters, were they anybody important that I'm supposed to know who
I
they are?
I have no idea who
that is. Jonathan Richman of the Modern Lovers. They were kind of like on the arty end of the punk boom in the late 70s.
I don't know who they are. Quick aside, one of the few things I like in this movie was the soundtrack, which is very late 90s liberal arts flat rock.
I wrote, welcome to the only 90s movie with a shit soundtrack. Sorry.
This is absolutely my vibe.
I did like Harland Williams. I was so happy when he arrived.
That was a decent bit.
Not the gay raid and part.
Pretty straightforward. Were people seriously doing gay sex raids in 1998, even in the South?
Were they in the South? Oh, yeah, they're Florida.
Yeah.
I really don't think so.
No.
It just doesn't
It's dumb.
A lot of setup for very little payoff. It was just unnecessary in that sense. I was also surprised to realize that Warren is W. Earl Brown from like Deadwood, Lost, The Walking Dead. Like we don't normally. I've never seen him in a role like this.
Warren and all of the ableism in this movie is just off the charts.
The first joke in the movie is making fun of the disabled kid.
Yeah.
I say that it's making fun of the disabled kid. The joke is actually just the word wiener, but we are constantly making fun of the intellectually disabled kid. And I understand that was going around in the culture in a weird way, you know, in the 90s with the Crank Anchors and South Park and a million other things. But even accepting that we weren't as sensitive or no one was being sensitive, it's just icky here.
Yeah.
I also want to point out, Colin was watching this part with me and he says, like, have you seen my baseball? And Colin said, is that where that's from? And I was like, what? And he had like heard people use that voice to ask that question to mock people. And so like I just want to say once again, like this kind of humor is directly harmful to real people.
I've never heard it either. I've heard the Franks and Beans, like people do that.
I think I've probably heard that without placing it, but yeah, it's the same thing. It's like just, I think that we mostly have moved away from this as a culture.
I would like to think
but if anybody wants to move back, please don't.
Please don't. Stay put.
I was going to hold this back, but since it keeps coming up, I've prepared an incomplete list of things that are not funny that this movie believes to be funny.
Ooh, I love it.
It's gonna be long.
Braces. The developmentally disabled. People being too big for their clothes. Having food on your face. Gay jokes. Old boobs. Matt Dillon. Zits and hives. Dog peril. People with crutches. Ejaculate. and big teeth. That is just some of the things that this movie assumes are inherently funny. And everything on that, I'm making fun of Matt Dillon a little bit because he does a bad job. But
I think Matt Dillon can be funny.
Everything other than that on this list is presented in this.
Old boobs can be funny.
This fake tan is...
Not in that, but not
the way that they were, obviously.
Because all of those things, the joke is the thing itself.
Yeah.
The joke is always, look, he has hives.
Mm.
Look, there's cum. Look, her boobs are old.
Yeah.
Like, there is no second layer. And half the time when there is, they fuck it up for gross things. Penis pain can be funny.
Oh, absolutely.
Until you show a weird, gross prosthetic ball through a zipper. That's the moment where that joke dies.
Yeah, we didn't need to see it. Yeah. We didn't need to see it. It's more of a, you know, left to the imagination.
Yes. What,
because it's funny if everyone's looking at it and losing their shit.
Right.
And that was one of the rare funny setups where people keep walking into the room.
Yeah.
You know, the fireman comes through the window. Like, that's funny. And you undercut that by going, look, gross, the scrotum. Like, that kills it.
That's similar to like the shtick that I always find super funny is when somebody gets cussed out or somebody cusses someone out and the curse words get bleeped out. Like that shit, I find that hilarious and much more so than just listening to the curse words, because just imagining like what could be said
right
at this point. Yeah, the prosthetic is like, oh, we can do it. Let's like that's kind of where that I feel like that went was that we were, oh, we can do it, so let's do it. And it also kind of went on a little long.
It was, it's like
this whole
a solid 10 minutes of the movie.
And this movie is kind of like a 2-hour unfunny Three's Company episode.
Just,
there's so much of the misunderstanding.
This was like a bad improv set. So clearly we're all approaching our cultural milieu. What is this uncomfortable thing I have to sit through from time to time?
I was also uncomfortable with Magda's fake tan. It was very borderline blackface.
Yes!
And I don't know. Like, I understand, you know, old people in Florida, I guess that's what they do. They overtan or whatever. But it just, it seemed like a bit much.
Also, it's not accurate. Like, I've seen those people. They get freckles.
So, facts.
Also, that would have been a good character. Magda, as old lady who needs a friend, and Mary is good at being her friend, relies zero on a tan or saggy breasts.
Yeah, there's a lot of things about Mary that get missed. Like, there's like an underlying goodness to Mary. I mean, yes, when you look at it, when you really like pay attention to it, you can figure out, say, okay, yes, I can see how she's easily lovable or whatnot, aside from the caricature that they try to make of her. It's like,
cool girl.
Yeah. You know, she likes sports. She, you know.
I have so much more to say about it. We're going to have to go back to cool girl. Finish your thought.
We'll get back to it. Let Sean do the facts.
Okay.
Movie was released July 17th, 1998. Debuted in fourth. The debuting Mask of Zorro. We did that movie, right? That was a listener pick?
Yeah. Bill Fisher. Thanks.
Yeah. The Mask of Zorro won that weekend. It was followed by the sophomore week for Lethal Weapon 4. It was followed by week 3 of Armageddon. Something About Mary was in fourth place with $13.7 million. It just kept hanging around. For more than a month, it was either third or fourth every week. Just word of mouth. Became a sleeper hit. People needed that comedy counter programming. And we all had a, I don't know, collective nationwide gas leak that convinced us this was funny.
Actually, pause. I think part of that was that the big blockbusters of 98, like Godzilla, were abject failures.
Right. There was a lot that was bombing. And this, like, Armageddon was doing well. And stuff like Mask of Zorro was, like, serious. It wasn't a fun, like, time. So, on Labor Day weekend, 2 months in theaters, it went to number one and made $10.9 million over that long weekend. Just beat Blade. Blade is a number one movie in America. This was week 3 of Blade.
I hope we get to do Blade.
Me too.
It was on the wheel
last
year. Less than $150,000 separated There's Something About Mary and Blade.
Wow.
16th number one movie of that year, because most of the first half of the year was still Titanic. Titanic is why I can't neatly say this was the first week 8, because Titanic just screwed up the thing for a while. But yes, that's what would happen in the 60s and 70s. A movie would take 2 months to climb to number one. It doesn't really happen anymore, so this was exceptional. And it spent 13 total weeks in the top 10, $176.4 million. This is the third highest grossing movie of 1998.
Wow.
Behind only Saving Private Ryan and Armageddon.
That's shocking.
This was this was a summer release.
Yeah.
So yeah, I mean, that explains why so many people saw it. So many high school kids were out of school.
Yeah.
And we still had dollar theaters.
We did. In 2000, AFI put out 100 years.
I don't want this.
100 laughs.
I
think
like
it was
this.
The third list.
I feel bad about where this is going.
It was the third or fourth list. And boy, did There's Something About Mary get a recency bump. It was the most recent film on the list. In 27th place, the American Film Institute
Please tell me you're not about to list some things that came below it.
This was the 27th greatest film of comedy of all time, ahead of Ghostbusters.
No.
This is Spinal Tap, Groundhog Day, Animal House, and Charlie Chaplin's Modern Times and City Lights.
Spinal Tap? Come on!
I just don't like that at all.
It was the highest ranking film of the 1990s. There were only five. Fargo in 93rd.
No!
Groundhog Day 34th. Mrs. Doubtfire 67th. City Slickers 86th. There's Something About Mary 27.
That is...
I can only assume that when they update the list, which they never will, will shoot off like a rocket, no longer ranked. Yeah. And we're going to go from that into Expensive Baubles.
Expensive Baubles.
Cameron Diaz got a Golden Globe nomination for this.
Yeah, she collected some hardware. She won New York Film Critics Circle. She won a Blockbuster Entertainment Award. She won an American Comedy Award, nominated for the Golden Globe. The film was nominated for Best Musical or Comedy. It lost both of those to Shakespeare in Love.
Also, I have to say, I think those are actually both legit nominations. Like, as much as I do not like this movie, at the time, that is the correct comedy to be acknowledging at the Golden Globes. And listen, we're going to get into it. But like, Cameron Diaz did what she had to do.
Put a pin in it.
Yeah.
Our first pin is in the cool girl trope. Our second pin is in Cameron Diaz.
They're the same.
So you're speaking of places where this movie belongs, the MTV Movie Awards.
Yes, that makes much more sense.
Yeah.
This one best movie.
No!
This defeated Saving Private Ryan, The Truman Show, Shakespeare in Love, and Armageddon for best movie.
A lot of teenagers saw this movie. The Truman Show is such a good movie.
It is.
Cameron Diaz won best female performance. Matt Dillon tied with Stephen Dorff in Blade for best villain. Ben Stiller and the dog were awarded best fight. Cameron Diaz and Ben Stiller were nominated separately for best comedic performance. They were both nominated. They lost to Adam Sandler in The Waterboy. A much better movie. We'll get into it. We don't have to get into it. I'm just reminding everyone that The Waterboy is a much better movie. They lost best kiss and best duo. So I think they went 4-for-8 at the MTV Movie Awards.
That's where it belongs.
Briefly, in the people who almost played the people, studio didn't want Ben Stiller. Studio wanted Owen Wilson. That's like saying, I don't want a turkey sandwich. I want a slightly different turkey sandwich.
Right, yeah, exactly. It's like, God.
Apparently, Jon Stewart was in the running.
Okay.
Yeah. Who they wanted for Pat Healy was Bill Murray, and they decided he was too old. I don't care. Make the movie marginally better. Like, he wasn't that old at the time.
Yeah, that would have been fine.
Yeah, that would have been a step up. They also,
it doesn't make any sense that she is interested in him when he looks like Matt Dillon. So it's not going to make any sense when she's interested in him when it's an old, but not that old, Bill Murray.
This is 5 years before Lost in Translation.
Yeah.
Like it's 5 years removed from Groundhog Day.
Right.
Like he's not out of his.
And she's 12 years older than Scarlett Johansson. So like, it's fine. Is it though?
Also considered for Pat Healy, Vince Vaughn, and Cuba Gooding Jr.
Well, I'm just so relieved that we are not watching the Cuba Gooding Jr. version of
Talk
this.
About rage.
I feel like it would take Camila out.
It for me. I wouldn't have been able to recover. That was just too much. I would would have vetoed it if that were, because I would have like I would have known.
Especially because the middle of this movie is like, why are we with this character all damn day?
Right. This is why I'm talking about a bad improv set, because there's too many things going on and they keep going back to the least interesting ones.
Right. I would have liked to have seen Vince Vaughn as Paddy Lee, though.
Vince Vaughn probably is the best on that list.
I think Bill Murray would have been.
Listen, also, this is like not Vince actually going to be redeemable.
And finally, for football player, for some reason, they were going to Drew Bledsoe first. I forget what Drew Bledsoe looked like. Maybe he's hotter than Brett Favre. And then they tried to get Steve Young of the 49ers, which actually would have paid off that bit in a more satisfying way, but could not. So settled on Brett Favre.
And he was the only person who does not abuse or gaslight or manipulate Mary. Right, because it was a long con,
different than real life,
to get a volleyball stadium built. Commit some welfare fraud.
Those are the sad facts. Do you want me to list every single movie that wasn't ranked ahead of it in the AFI list?
I really, really don't.
Just to rub it in.
I am gonna read it later with some chocolate in my hand. Here's the thing. I had remembered the title of this film, meaning Mary has a je ne sais quoi, right?
Yeah.
No, she doesn't. She's a super hot chick who is like so ridiculously beyond parody of Cool Girl.
Mm-hmm. Cool Girl. Men always use that, don't they? As their defining compliment. She's a cool girl. Cool Girl is hot. Cool Girl is game. Cool Girl is fun. Cool Girl never gets angry at her man. She only smiles in a chagrined, loving manner and then presents her mouth for fucking. She likes what he likes.
Where she is holding 7 full bags of hamburgers one-handed and then grabs her drink, so she has to say, hey, you want the sports section?
Right.
So there's not something about her. She is just a male fantasy.
Right.
So then I watched this movie and I had forgotten like the plot. Every man stalks her, lies to her, abuses her. Every man abuses her, including Ben Stiller. Like he is.
Yes.
He is the. Sean mentioned that he was going to not bring his poor thing's tote bag, so not to send me into a rage spiral.
Sorry about that.
And I was like, no, I already had to think about poor things because of There's Something About Mary, because this is another movie whose unknown to it thesis is men are the worst.
Is
that the thing? Does this movie think that it is normal for men to do this to women they love?
I think so.
Absolutely.
I don't like it.
1998. Like Ben Stiller is the least, like, I'll give it to him, his character for it, like this, is that he was curious about this girl. For whatever reason, stuck around his mind for 13 years. Mm-hmm. And, you know, even having never, like, seen her again. Like, they didn't even get to go to the prom. And then
he never saw her again.
Right, and they moved away somewhere.
This hugely traumatic event in his life.
Like, yeah, so, I mean, I understand. So, wait. Let's roll it back a little bit.
Please.
Is there anybody, either one of you, if you were in that situation or had a similar situation, anybody in your past that, you know, like 10 plus years later, you still kind of like think about or even wonder about?
Yes.
If I were single. Needham,
if you're listening, sure. I do think about you from time to time.
Yes. Would you have ever, like, now we can just hop on social media and hop on the internet and be like, you know, peek in real quick anonymously.
I think at one point we were Facebook friends, but I very explicitly, I'm like, I don't need to know what's actually going on.
Yeah.
Because I just like to think about you from time to time.
Well, no, I mean, I actually had like an ex like email me once, like a couple years ago, and I was like, nope, deleted it, unopened, whatever, I don't care.
Camila, have you watched Past Lives yet?
No, not yet.
Okay, well, you need to know.
I came close the other night. So you know, he hires a private eye and then gets her and finds out her information and then goes to stalk her. I have forgotten what the fuck my point was.
You're saying that people don't do that. You're saying that everybody thinks about someone from their past from time to time.
Yes.
And then they just think about them and or go on Facebook.
Right. When he's like, crushes don't last for 13 years. Of course they fucking do.
Yes. Especially if they were an idea in your head.
Right.
So the whole premise behind this whole thing is like, oh yeah, if you're infatuated with the idea of a person, then you must be in love with them. And yes, it is absolutely okay for you to go and stalk them and figure out and go to where they are and like use what you learn about them to try to woo them.
Also, okay, that's another thing that really bothers me about this. And I don't know if this was a cultural thing at the time or if it is just young men. In High Fidelity, when he says,
what really matters is what you like, not what you are like.
Right? Like, the point of High Fidelity is that he eventually learns that's not true.
Right?
Sort of. This movie really believes that what makes Mary so great, other than having a tight bod, is that she likes football and golf and Harold and Maude, right? The way that you can win Mary's heart over is by pretending to like those things and be an architect and have a house in Nepal, right?
Like,
that is not real life. That is not what actually makes people compatible.
Exactly, because when they do that thing about, you know, the Harold and Maude movie, and immediately I thought, well, what does that look like, you know, a couple months from now when Mary makes a quote, an offhanded quote from Harold and Maude, or, you know, makes a joke or whatever, and he has no idea what she's talking about? Because that's the kind of real life thing that I'm talking, like, if we vibe on a movie, mm-hmm. and you say, and I'm going to like bring it up, it's going to be our inside joke, it's going to be our thing, and if you can't vibe with that back, then it's like you're a fraud.
And that's with a lot of these guys, it's like, what was your end game?
Right?
If they talked about I'm trying to fuck her, then it's like, all right, I'm, you know, you're a scumbag, but I understand.
Right.
But they all talk like I am in love with her.
Right.
Every character says that. So is Crutches guy
going to
keep
guy?
That accent until they die?
Right.
Is Matt Dillon going to keep pretending to be an architect?
Which, how does that work?
I know it's a comedy, but you have to have some internal logic, which is why, as horrible as all of these men are to her, by the movie's own logic, like the final obstacle where she gets mad at him is bullshit. There's a million worse things that have been done to her already in this movie that she's kind of been like, and when it's essentially like his sins are, I looked you up, which in a pre-Facebook age, like, yeah, might involve paying a person whose job it is to find people.
Right.
And then I came down here and kind of, you know, orchestrated seeing you.
Yeah.
Like, that's not a sin in the reality of this movie.
No.
And so for her to be like, we're done. It's like, what? Why? Look at who else is hanging around.
Well, like they also do the whole
Robin
thing.
Robin is unconvinced.
I interpreted that differently, and I might be wrong. I mean, at this point, I was sort of in a semi-rage blackout. Right. But like, I thought that she had realized that everybody is coming for her, and this was confirmation that the guy who seemed the nicest was also coming for her, and she couldn't handle it. That's how I read that.
It's possible, but they also do the trope thing in this movie as to where he doesn't explain himself.
No, he does not.
Like, with
never.
Three's Company.
Yeah, with one or two sentences, he could have explained everything that Sean just said, and she could have had an informed decision. But I also think that maybe she was mad because at that point she still thought Matt Dillon was a killer, and he was his fault that he was in her life, and she was already shell-shocked from Woogie. That
Woogie.
Was the one that she had the restraining order against.
Can we talk about Woogie's wife for 1 second?
Oh my God.
Just because.
That's another like cool, quote unquote, cool
exactly.
girl.
Exactly. Woogie's wife comes into the backyard. She's like, it's like the, like, my hungry boys want Tostitos thing.
Right, yeah. It's like the Lonely Island skit.
Yes. And she's fully ignored. And he's like, go bake us some cookies. Also later when he's like, oh, I want a Bundt cake.
Yeah.
And they're like, well, let's see if we have a Bundt pan. That's not reality. And then it's like they show her going down on him like, what a loser. And then later they show him going down on her as like, what a double super extra loser.
Right.
What if it's just part of having a sexual relationship with someone? Sorry, I'm having...
Robin is going to
this movie.
I did like the line, every day is better than the next. Like, that was one of the few times I actually laughed. You know, I know that it is easy to problematize a movie from the past. We could do it for everything we watched that was made before today.
We could do it for everything we watch.
Period. Yeah. And I know that a lot of people are like, well, including me, I am frequently saying you can't write movies off because they were of a different standard.
Check out our episodes on Blazing Saddles and Life of Brian.
But this is just not good.
It's just bad.
Yes.
Yeah, this is... I've failed to understand why it worked then.
Right.
What?
Shock.
Like, even to this day, like, though we all know and in our right mind that, you know, most of all of these jokes are in bad taste and bad form or whatnot. In the alone at night, in the dark. You know, there could be one or two if it was...
If it hit that, you just right.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. That you'd be embarrassed to... But you wouldn't repeat. You wouldn't say, you know, you'd be embarrassed that you found it funny. None of that here. Like, no. It's still... It's not even just the fact that all of these so-called jokes are problematic and offensive to everyone involved. It's that they're just not good.
I think I laughed a little bit during the dog fight.
That was making me mad, too.
But
you're not a dog person.
I'm not a dog person. And I will say that the previous dog violence scene where the dog catches on fire.
That was fucked up.
Genuinely upset me. Yeah. And I kept thinking about Camila's dog professor.
And I kept thinking about, like, does this dog have a burn mark? Like, is his wiener burnt? Like, what is this? Is
so right? So, I'm afraid of dogs. If you make me upset for a dog, you've done something wrong. Now, that being said, when later on the dog fight happened, I just kind of laughed at, like, I can't believe they went this far.
Yeah.
Which, like, I think is really what this movie was banking on.
I will grant you the dog jumping and him ducking and the dog flying out the
that
window.
That was literally the thing that made me laugh. Yeah.
Because anything flying out a window is funny.
Yeah.
But the other stuff with stuff like that and even the semen and some of the other physical gags is like it looks bad. It looks bad. And was it just this pushing the envelope shock thing that it's like, I've never seen that in a movie before. I don't care that it looks terrible. And it's 6 minutes of a man fighting a stuffed animal that never once appears to be an actual creature.
Right.
That we're just like, I never do. It's just so silly.
I thought that was intentional to make it less upsetting, which didn't work for me.
I hope so, because of when he drops, does the drop kick or whatever. The only part that made me laugh is when Warren throat punches somebody on the beach. I forget.
The whole bit where anytime you touch his ears, he will attack you.
Right.
That is genuinely funny because that is not related to his disability.
No, I'm also very sensitive around my ears.
I was just going to say, like, anyone has a trigger point where they might punch you in the neck if you come at it. So, and
like,
that Dan
can't sneak, like, can't come in this area with unannounced. Like,
so, yes, I agree. And also, like, I think that one of the redeeming things for this movie is, for me, is that, like, even though Cameron Diaz represents a trope that I hate and is in a movie that I hate and is beset by a horrible plot, I don't dislike watching her.
Right.
So it makes me survive this movie.
Well, it's because you know that in it, like, again, she's doing the best she can with what she got. She's doing what she can. And there are just so many little things. Do we ever really find out what kind of doctor she is?
She's an orthopedic surgeon.
Okay. But she worked on that guy's back.
Okay. Which also, so he literally broke his back, but he's pretending to use crutches, and she's an orthopedic surgeon, and this is not fooling her.
Pain is weird.
Okay.
Yeah. So, but there are so many other little things aside the fact that she is a quote-unquote cool girl that we could have delved into to make her more interesting of a character, to make it more believable that these dudes would go through such...
The thing that is not believable, unless this movie thinks every man who falls in love with a woman is going to abuse that woman. The thing to me that is really difficult to accept is the idea that there's something about Mary that makes her abusable because it feels very victim blamey. And also, like, Mary is kind of stupid in a few different ways. Like, the fact that she's like, oh, yeah, I definitely want to date Matt Dillon because he is parroting back things to me that I should probably realize he's surveilling me in some way. Like, I'm like, you're dumb. Yeah. And then also, like, I'm not an architect, so maybe I'm wrong. But when she's like, is this Art Deco or Art Nouveau? I'm pretty sure it's neither. So, like, and then it should be a real red flag when your architect date is like, I don't know, babe. Right? Like, she's kind of dumb.
Only because
she wasted her brain on med school.
The world of this movie does not contain an intelligent person.
Okay.
Because I don't know that the Farrellys have ever met one until he worked with Mahershala Ali. Yeah.
I think Viggo Mortensen is smart.
Maybe.
I think Linda Cardellini is smart.
Yes,
Jim
should.
Jim Carrey is smart.
I should give. Okay. Sorry. I should give flowers.
No, he's not anti-vax. I'm so sorry. Okay, Sean.
I should give flowers to Cameron Diaz because I've talked on the show in the past and in many, many other places that I generally do not like her. I'm beginning to think she gave up at a point because when I talk about movies where I think she is not present, they're all later. Like they're all, you know, I think of Bad Teacher.
I thought she was good in Bad Teacher. I thought Bad Teacher was her last gasp of eye control. Or was that before or after the one where she fucks a car?
That was before, but I think she was a little less checked out there because it was a prestige product.
No,
but
I think she was trying in Bad Teacher. I like Bad Teacher.
I think there's a turning point because when I think of what do I like her in? I like her in Being John Malkovich. I like her in Gangs of New York.
Really?
Yeah. I like her in this.
You are the first person I've heard say that other than the Hollywood Foreign Press Association. Yeah.
Well, I saw that movie once 25 years ago, but maybe not. I think she's good in this. And I think that she is making a conscious decision to make this all work.
Yeah.
And I truly believe that if she hadn't brought this very selfless warmth to it beyond the cool girl stuff, like this would be so off-putting that it never would have come together. I think she's carrying it single-handedly, not to quality, but just to functionality.
So that what you're saying does make sense to me, but I did also object to, because this movie is so ableist, them being like, she treats disabled people like they're human. What a heart of gold.
Yeah.
That rubbed me the wrong way.
The trailer, don't put it, I don't put all of it in.
We
don't need to subject people to very much. Here's trailer.
You know this.
Yeah.
You know what happens.
Yeah.
There's going to be a record scratch.
Are you going to the prom?
I don't prom.
Because I thought maybe we could go together.
Why do birds suddenly appear?
When I was 16 years old, I fell in love.
Oh!
We got a bleeder!
It was definitely love.
I'd marry again.
I mean, crushes don't last for 13 years, right?
He couldn't help it.
Hi, it's Ted.
I haven't seen you since
senior prom.
And he couldn't explain it.
You asked me to follow around your girl, and I did. And then the truth is, I only started to like her.
Because there's something about Mary.
She's still a fox.
Mary's a fox. She's a fox.
I want a guy who can play 36 holes and still have enough energy to take me and my brother to a ball game.
From the Farrelly Brothers, directors of Dumb and Dumber and Kingpin, Cameron Diaz, Matt Dillon, Ben Stiller. There's something about Mary.
Are you the little guy making all that big noise, huh?
I watched the trailer long before I rewatched the movie, and I was like, oh, I think I'm going to have a bad time. And I was right. Yeah. And the Letterboxd is Sad Bastard and Loser Cinema. Is that about the characters or you if you like it? I don't know. Let's move on. I give it a 17.
Mm. Oh, that's also my number. Because I was thinking it's one less than the age of majority.
There are some funny people here. Like I said, Harlan, we didn't mention Keith David. Keith David is the rare beam of sunshine in this movie.
I think that's like the youngest I've ever seen him.
Yeah. Well, in They Live.
And Marky Post. Candy Alexander for a few seconds for some reason.
Yeah. It's like I was very surprised to see her. 12.
Yeah.
Yep.
That adds up to a 15 and a third. 15 and a third. That is very low on our list.
I feel great right now. I was a little worried coming in that it was going to be like Robin the Feminist Killjoy hour. So I'm glad that you don't need to be as the way I am as I am to realize how gross this movie is.
No, I didn't think either of you would like it, but I was like, am I being too mean? Is this just a time where I'm being cranky about it? No, it's terrible. No, and all I can say is if you have warm feelings toward this movie, just don't go back.
No.
Just leave them there and don't watch it again. Because either you're not going to like it like we did, or you are, and then you should feel bad about yourself. So just leave this alone.
That's funny. I was just listening to a podcast, 60 Songs Explain the 90s, and the host, Rob Harvella, he says, the greatest movie I've ever seen is Loaded Weapon Part 1. And he's like, have I seen it since I was 12? No. Yeah. And I refuse to do that because it'll forever stay the greatest movie I've ever seen.
I don't know, I've always been curious about it. I've never watched one of those.
I think there's only the one.
I'm not even thinking about that. I'm thinking about
Lethal Weapon.
I've never seen a Lethal Weapon. I've never seen Loaded Weapon. But what I'm confusing with it and talking about is Hot Shots. I've never seen Hot Shots.
Now watch, Lethal Weapon's going to be what we pick.
To the bingo card.
Love Triangle.
Yeah, I mean, I assume you counted for additional geometric shapes when you meant.
Yes, I didn't mean just exactly a perfect love triangle.
All right.
Starring a Nepo baby, Ben Stiller.
Oh, yeah.
Title is a complete sentence.
That's correct.
There is something about Mary. Yeah. Unless Mary is a job.
Nope, still no bingo.
No bingo. It's time for You Can't Handle the Truth. Last night I was at AMC is doing more of these secret sneak previews. I'm wondering what the business model there is, but it's working both of the times I've done it.
Are they free?
No, they're like $5.
Oh, okay.
And they'll either be screen unseen, which can be anything, or scream unseen, which is guaranteed to be spooky. And I support this effort, even if last night I had a bad time, because I was hoping it would be either The First Omen or Abigail, that movie about the vampire ballerina. And instead, it was a movie called Sting about a big spider eating people in an apartment building. And I don't like bugs. I had a bad time. But I'm glad that people are doing more mystery movies, including...
You can thank unions for that, Sean.
Yeah. Do I have a mystery series coming up? I'll tell you about it later. New Roadhouse. Nope.
Okay, I got a lot to say about the New Roadhouse. Camila, did you watch New Roadhouse?
Not yet. Okay. It's going to be a while.
Okay.
Go, please.
All right. So my Letterboxd review was, they remade Roadhouse for Men, and that's not a joke, right? Like, I went back and watched the original because why wouldn't I? Right. And like, that is masculinity porn for women, right? Like, Dalton, Patrick Swayze is a cool girl, but he is a cool guy, right? It's like he could rip a guy's throat out and support your weight by fingering you, but he also has a philosophy degree, right? Like, right.
Oh, it's been a long time since I've seen this movie. All I remember was the throat pulling out.
Watching this other one, like, I don't want to be like the guys who hated Lady Ghostbusters. But I'm kind of like, why?
However.
Why? And also, like, our friend Jeremiah has a show at Arcade Comedy Theater called Bootleg Reboots, where people who have never seen a movie have to do an improv set of the plot of the movie based on, like, cultural vibes and what the audience tells them to make sure they hit.
This feels like no one actually saw Roadhouse.
And it was like, oh, at some point he has to say, be nice, right? Like, you know, when he gets patched up and he winces when she takes off his Band-Aid, like, acknowledge pain don't hurt. Like, I'm not saying be slavish, right?
Like, say pain don't hurt. Or, why are we here if no one says?
Like, make her say, I thought you guys would say pain don't hurt. And then he makes a joke about it. Like, I did like this character. Like, Jake Gyllenhaal's very charming in this.
I love him.
Yes. And he looks good. And like, the fights are okay.
Hang on.
Yeah.
Mild spoilers for Roadhouse Remake. I like him okay. He's no Patrick Swayze, but who among us? I like him okay. And then the turn in the movie is like, actually, I am a psychopath that enjoys murdering people, and I'm going to do that for the rest of the film.
That's somewhat source material.
No, like, but this is like, no, I am glad that I get to do this. And it gets so dark.
You know what? At this point, I had already checked out of the movie.
Oh,
so
that was
a good
move.
Yeah, I was going to say that I think that I didn't feel betrayed by it at that point. Mm-hmm. I do see what you're saying.
Yeah, go on.
Why make this a Roadhouse remake?
Yeah.
I don't think Roadhouse, like, obviously, this is straight to streaming, right? It's not like they were like, we had to sell tickets. You know what I mean? Why not just call this, like, Bouncer or Cooler or whatever?
Yeah.
Like, Fast and the Furious was a remake of Point Break, right? Like, and now there are 10 of them.
Yeah.
So, like, if you want the vibes of an old movie, you can make a new version of that movie with the same vibes and a new plot, and you don't have to pay for it.
So many movies make this mistake, in my opinion. Yeah.
Right.
Is that, you know, just, oh, we're going to remake blah, blah, blah. And it's like, just call it something else.
And then you're not going to have weirdo feminists being like, why are you doing masculinity porn for men? No one wants that. And then also this MMA Irish guy sucks.
Oh, Connor, I thought he was
Connor,
the highlight.
Whatever.
Oh, I fucking hate that dude. Every minute he was on the screen, I was like, what?
I mean, he's a piece of shit in real life, but I thought, oh, a charismatic screen presence.
Oh, I liked him. Absolute opposite of that.
I would like them to not let MMA fighters and, sorry, Sean, wrestlers on screen.
There are three good ones.
Wrestlers are already actors.
I know.
So, like,
but
there's
just,
something there.
But it's like, even in that, when I know, I don't know anything about MMA, yeah, really. I don't know anything mm-hmm. about the wrestlers. Somebody will show up on screen and I will know exactly, yeah, you're not an actor. Yeah. And then it'll turn out to be like, oh, yeah, this is a so-and-so blah, blah, champion. Blah, and yes, and it's just so it just kind of fucks up the whole rhythm for
it's
me.
It's like whenever you watch a dance movie and there's always some people, it's like, oh,
when
you're
Julia
not.
Stiles shows up.
Oh, no, she's an actor, right? Sort of. No, I like her. But she's like, it's very much like in dance movies, there's always the actors who have had dance lessons.
Right.
And there mm-hmm. are the dancers.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
Cut away.
Exactly.
Why is Kevin Bacon a lady now?
You guys are making fun of the actors who can't dance. I'm making fun of the dancers who can't act, just to be clear.
To me, the question here is like, I'm sorry, did you think that Roadhouse was good? Like, Roadhouse is fun, but it is fun because it's kind of ridiculous.
Right.
It's a weird over-the-top thing that doesn't work, didn't make money, got panned, and just wore us down over time.
So
because like the VHS moved at a time when you owned three tapes.
Right.
And it was on cable forever. And eventually you're like, it's kind of fun. It's a fun movie.
I do really like Roadhouse. And the other thing that I felt like was missing from the Dalton in this is that OG Dalton is a great manager. And that is something that is underappreciated about that film. He runs a tight business.
So is it, I do remember that.
Yes.
That point. So is this one just kind of take itself too seriously?
No, or? It doesn't take itself seriously at all. It has like Looney Tunes violence. That guy flies off the boat.
Yeah.
I was sure he was dead.
But it's not, it's cool in a way that in the original movie, the movie didn't have to try to posture and the movie didn't have to try to be slick and cool mm-hmm. because Patrick Swayze is here and he's the coolest man who's ever lived. So this movie is constantly trying to be like, oh yeah, vibes, man. Look how stylish we are. It's like, no. If you want to do a Roadhouse, which is a bad idea, you have to be kind of cheesy. Mm-hmm. It worked because it was cheesy. Don't try to be cool.
Also, I've never been to the Florida Keys, but the vibe is not correct for a Roadhouse is my feeling.
Probably not.
Like the original one's like Mississippi.
Gotcha.
All of which is to say, probably don't see this movie. Other things you probably should not see include Ghostbusters.
I was just going to say, this kind of ties into Ghostbusters. I already invoked it.
Yeah. Frozen Empire.
Sorry.
Did you see it, Camille?
No.
Okay.
Did you?
No!
It's
so animated about
it is slightly better than the last one, if only because the last one was horrible from beginning to end.
Yeah, I think I barely watched that one.
And this one kind of has, you know, I mean, I gave it a 1.5 on Letterboxd.
Okay.
Like, there are a few moments, but if you try to be like, I'm not going to hold this to the standards of the original film and I will evaluate it on its own, it's the worst season of Stranger Things ever. It's just some kids are fighting some spooks and that's it. Like, there's nothing to it for you to say, okay, let me. It's literally like, we found the thing that made the big evil entity appear. We beat it. Like, there's nothing to it from that perspective. And why would you evaluate it like that? Because there is never a moment where it's not going, huh? Ghostbusters, 1984. Well, look, we're back at the library again. Know who's at the library? The library ghost. Dan Aykroyd's going to look at it and make the same face. Look, Annie Potts is here. We didn't give her anything to do, but she sure is here. That's the whole movie. What bullshit. It's just, yeah.
That's too bad.
This is why I vetoed the last one literally the week it came out.
Oh, that's right. You used your pre-veto.
I used my pre-veto.
Your 100th episode gift.
Yeah. What else? Late Night with the Devil is great. David Desmalchin, indie horror movie. Quick, less than 90 minutes. Found footage of a 70s late night TV show where things get satanic. This is one of the best ways to go to found footage because you're watching a TV broadcast that looks exactly like a TV broadcast. It's great.
Has he done a movie with David Lynch yet? Because
Pretty sure. Isn't he in Twin Peaks The Return?
I didn't watch Twin Peaks The Return.
Because you were angry that Sight and Sound said it was a movie?
Kind of, yeah.
I think he's in Twin Peaks.
Isn't he?
I'm saying he should be. It's a match made in heaven.
Yes, he is in Twin Peaks. He is in Twin Peaks The Return.
He absolutely has Lynch vibes.
Yes. He's great. Love him.
He's plucked out of David Lynch's forehead, right, fully formed. Exactly. Yeah,
exactly. He'll pop up on, you know, Svengoolie. I mean, I know I talk about Joe Bob all the time.
Oh, yes.
Svengoolie is that, but for 50 years through two Svengoolies was a horror host just in Chicago. Mm-hmm. And only in the past 3 or 4 years, it's on MeTV, one of those no HD channel exists old timey programming. Like, they put Svengoolie on Saturday night. It's great. And David Desmalchin will just show up and do a weird character.
Amazing.
Like, just pop in and be on that show. Love him. You may have noticed, retroactive programming note, we kind of skipped a week here. We gave ourselves a spring break. And what a day. The day I would have watched There's Something About Mary. First, I watched the 70s King Kong. Not good, but I would probably watch it again right now. Like,
better remake than Roadhouse.
It doesn't work. And yet, boy, is it fascinating.
It is so interesting.
She wants to fuck that ape.
She sure does.
Like, she's not even thinking about it too critically. She's just into Kong.
She crash lands onto a boat and immediately starts flirting.
What year is this Kong?
76.
Gotcha. And then later that night, I watched Event Horizon. Wow.
Event Horizon. Other people who weren't popular in high school may have had the experience of accidentally ending up at one of the popular kids' houses.
Yeah.
And that was my experience of watching Event Horizon. Was my friend Cecilia had started dating this guy Brett. He was cool, and so suddenly I was in a basement full of cool kids watching a really scary movie.
It's super.
I saw it in the theater. I have memories of it, but I don't remember what it was
about. It's very dark.
I mean, still 6 out of 10, but like it's a mess. And I guess there's a director's cut that makes it better. It's Sam Neill leads a crew because there's this ship that was meant to hop between dimensions. This is the first thing that did the folding a paper in half and putting a pencil through it to illustrate wormholes. And they like the ship.
I don't think it is the first thing.
Probably not the first thing.
I feel like they do that in the pilot of Quantum Leap.
The ship shows, this mysterious ship shows back up and there's all kind of gore on it, and they eventually work out that they sent it to hell and like start having visions. Oh, it's so, I love it so much for a deeply mediocre movie. I'm just so happy that I watched that.
I mean, it was made in a lab for you.
My Letterboxd review was, you know, the Hans Moleman meme, I need the biggest seed belly you have. No, that's too big. I need the 90s-est aliens you have. No, that's too 90s. It's a hard cut on the credits to Prodigy's Firestarter playing over the credits. Watch it again tomorrow. It won't be any better. I'll love it so much. Sorry, I took a lot of time there. Robin, other than Roadhouse.
I watched Shirley, the Netflix movie with Regina King about Shirley Chisholm.
Yeah, I almost watched that last night. How was that?
Rough. It's rough. It's really rough, and I'm really tired.
Like, rough as an emotional?
No, or just no, like this TV movie problem that we were talking about. Like I know it's like glib and reductive, but like I really do think that in 2020, Netflix was like, what famous black people can we make movies about?
Quite possibly,
and then just gave up on them.
Yeah.
And like Regina King is trying her hardest, but like, the movie's so...
It's Rustin 2 is what
it is. So Rustin-y. It's a little better than Rustin, because Regina King's right. So like, it's a little better than Rustin. But it's such a letdown, and it was a struggle to get through.
That's too bad.
And I also found out that Regina King has a younger sister named Raina King, which is spelled R-E-I-N-A, which means her name is one less letter than her sister, and her sister has an Oscar, and I can't handle that emotionally.
I mean, this is kind of my sister and I, our names are one letter difference.
Oh, spelling. No!
Camila and Kalila.
Okay, but she got a different letter.
Yeah.
She got a subletter.
Yes.
Okay.
I'm trying to figure out how far they could have kept going. They could have had a third name named Rena and a fourth named Rin and a fifth named Ree.
Yeah.
They could have just kept reducing their children all the way down.
It's the fucking, what's his name? Joe Blow Blow? Whatever. What is his name? The George
Foreman?
Yes. Thank
I'm
you.
I'm so glad I was able to get
thank
there.
Thank you.
How'd you get there from Joe Blow Blow?
I don't know.
Because I understood the context clues. I'm really good at guessing. I am you really are. Good at guessing.
This is why improv is your is your jam.
Anything else?
Oh, I saw Wonka. It's
is that
dumb.
The Timothy Chalamet?
It's dumb.
Yeah.
As yeah, it would be.
It's getting worse in my mind. Like, I didn't totally hate it when I watched it, but every day I passed, I was like, what was the Oompa Loompa doing? Why did, anyway.
It's dumb.
Mm-hmm. Camila.
I watched Apples Never Fall, the little miniseries on Peacock, and everybody seems to be talking about it right now. It is very good.
Yeah.
Until you get to the, till we solve the problem. So, you know, it kind of falls apart. Be prepared in the last episode.
What's that about?
It's about this family who, Annette Bening and Sam Neill, and the mom disappears, and everybody's convinced that the dad had killed her. And each episode is supposed to be, it's like six episodes. Each one is supposed to be from a different family member's perspective, but they don't do a good job of just like keeping it from their perspective, because we'll like go, it'll be titled like Sam will be the name of the episode. And it's supposed to be focused on them and from their perspective, but he's talking, we'll see shit that he has no idea that is happening. Like,
I hate a wandering point
right?
of view.
Like, if we're going to do it, do
yes.
it.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, but other, I mean, it's some really good performances, but it just kind of falls apart at the last episode. Hell or High Water from 2016. Chris Pine.
I kind of remember liking that.
I really liked
it. It's very good.
It's so good.
It was in my top 10 that year.
I don't know. It took me so long to watch it.
Because you really like Chris Pine, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Is that the guy that makes all the shows now?
Oh, God, I hope not.
What?
The Yellowstone guy.
Isn't that the Yellowstone guy?
I bet it is. So I was going to say that I remember liking that movie, but I also remember they often upload the Oscar-nominated screenplays places as like a read this screenplay for free. Mm. And I started reading that screenplay. And you know the like breasted boobily down the stairs joke? Mm-hmm. That screenplay is all about breasting boobily. I mean, women barely appear in that film, but every time they do, we sure hear about their tits.
Wow.
And it filled me with so much rage that I was like, I think I now dislike the movie that I liked.
That's too bad.
Is he the Yellowstone guy?
It is written by Taylor Sheridan, who went on to found the Yellowstone Empire of programs.
Wow.
Union Buster and Generalized Jackass.
Taylor really?
Sheridan. He's like, I don't need the WGA. I write all my scripts.
I'm wearing a pullover from Bucky's, the Texas gigantic gas station chain that they're all like little roadside attractions that double as gas stations. If you go in one of those or any like place with kitsch in the South, Yellowstone is what The Office is to the rest of us. Like, there, it's covered in like shirts with Yellowstone sayings.
Okay.
And
going back to guessing and
mugs
improv
and magnets.
I short form class show, they played a guessing game and it was like name a TV show, and person shouted out Yellowstone and no one in the class knew what Yellowstone was. And it's
I haven't seen a second of it.
Either.
It's literally the most watched show on television.
Wow.
And it's just like, well, two Americas.
I have half a mind to watch that one with Harrison Ford and Helen Mirren.
Right. Yellowstone 18 something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure I would like it. Anyway, Hell or High Water. That is good. Taylor Sheridan beating a piece of shit aside. Good movie.
I'm sorry, yeah, we totally Foster. Derailed what you were going to say, Camila. <Yeah.
laughs> It's fine. Chris Pine, Ben Foster. It's just like, as far as like thrillers and, you know, bank heists and that bit goes. And I also really love the chemistry between Ben and Chris. They do a really great job as brothers.
He's so good too, Ben Foster.
I know. Like, he's, and that's what I'm saying. Like, I don't know what took me so long to watch, because I generally, he's one of those people I'm like, oh yeah, Ben Foster. Yes, I will check that out. And
have you seen
Chris
Leave
Pine.
No Trace?
I don't think so.
I love Leave No Trace. He's in that.
He's never, you know, he's never like, I'm watching it because Ben's in it, but he's like, I'm sure glad when he shows up.
Yeah.
I watched Aquaman and The Lost Kingdom.
Oh, so did I.
I did not.
You know, for a movie
never did.
That has Patrick Wilson, Yahya Abdul-Mateen, and Jason Momoa, I should have had much more fun.
Yes.
This movie.
There's so much plot. There is so much plot in that movie.
What in the fucked up. Like, just stop.
It is so complex and layered, and no one cares.
Straight.
At all.
It's just unnecessary nonsense. Like, the whole him being in a desert prison, like, there's, like, entire sets and scenes and worlds that we didn't need.
Like, it's like global warming is the real bad guy, but global warming is represented by an ancient being, which is acting through a person on Earth who then also possesses Aquaman's evil brother, who is maybe not evil. It's so complicated.
It's unnecessary.
I'm sorry. Do you say the desert?
Yes.
You're the water movie. That's you get to be I'm the water saying. Movie.
Right.
Dune is in a few months.
It's just
go to the water.
Calm down, man. Like, cool your jets.
Also, every time they're underwater, I just get hypnotized by their hair.
Right. It's just this waving CGI. I just can't. It's just so, it's too much happening. It's overstimulated and not in a good way. I don't like it. I don't even know why. I guess it was free and that's why.
It was one of those movies. It's on Max and I was like, sure.
I was like, yeah, this is where I am mentally right now. And even turns out I really wasn't.
I remember liking the first one.
I feel like we all kind of went, all right, everyone pick one B-tier DC subseries that you're gonna reluctantly. But I went with Shazam instead of Aquaman. And I kind of liked the Shazam last year. But
yeah. Oh, I hated it so much.
I haven't seen, I think I saw the first one. Documentary on Hulu, Freaknik, The Wildest Party Never Told. Oh. Yo, that is not a good, it wasn't a good documentary.
Oh, really?
No, I felt like they were missing the point. It started off well where they gave us the origin story of it and that it all didn't start off as like just terribleness. And it came from a place of pure heart as to where just a bunch of college kids who couldn't afford to go home for spring break or anything, just like, let's just have a picnic and a party for ourselves. Yay. And call it Freaknik because of like, it's more like, ah, freak, shishik, you know, from that song because this was like the '80s when they started it. Mm-hmm. And then it turned into something hard and just terrible and awful because a bunch of grown men decided they needed to go down and do things and people like Luke Skywalker from Two Live Crew got involved and it's just fucking ridiculous.
Really?
Yeah. And he's even in the documentary and it makes me think, oh. I haven't looked too deep into it, but I feel like between him, they spend so much time like praising Luke and Jermaine Dupri. And I feel like they're producers. I didn't look and see to confirm that.
Okay.
But it feels like that's a lot. Like, this isn't.
Did they do anything wrong or bad?
Not that I know of.
Okay.
It's just of, but you know who Two Live Crew is.
Right.
And it just kind of perpetuates.
I think.
And I believe that Luke was performed in like later years. I don't know for a fact. But he has something, if not directly, then indirectly, something to do with what it turned into, the vibe. And I was, you know, it was like, the 90s, you know, we didn't have internet, it was all word of mouth, and it was happening in Atlanta. And so, you know, I didn't know anything about it until I was like probably like 96, 97. I was like, you know, out of high school for a couple of years. And thank God I never wanted to go to it. It always kind of sounded scary to me.
I think you were right.
Yeah. And then, you know, also, I mean, if I did, there's no way on this God's green earth my mother would have allowed it to happen. So, and thank God for that. Yeah, great. So,
nice parenting.
Yeah, so I'm happy that I don't have any actual accounts of it. I have nothing to do but all I know about it is hearsay and what I've read.
I just get the, like, Mark Vicente vibe of when people like that are involved in the documentary where it's like, okay, but were you complicit?
Right. Yeah. Yeah. It just, yeah. And Lavender from another 2016. Don't bother. It's on Netflix and it's just not good.
Sometimes you just watch things.
Yeah. Netflix was all like, hey, it's leaving soon. I was like, all right.
I am such a slut for leaving soon. They get me. I'm like, well, I have to watch it.
What happens 2 months from now when I decide, yeah, I do want to watch Lavender and the only way it's available is I have to pay $5.99 to watch it. No.
Can't be done.
Okay.
The Prodigy song at the end of Event Horizon was Funky Shit, not Firestarter.
Oh.
In any case, let's get ready to drama. Oh, briefly, my obsession with actors with bizarrely long careers.
Yes.
We watched Saboteur, Hitchcock's Saboteur, which is way better than I remember it. I remember that as being one of the, like, kind of plotting ones. That's really good. The, like, mid-tier bad guy is played by Norman Lloyd. Norman Lloyd's first feature on Letterboxd is a movie called The Streets of New York from 1939. His last feature is Trainwreck with Amy Schumer.
Oh my gosh.
He lived to be 107.
Woo! Wow.
Good for you, sir. Him. But next week, land on Trainwreck just to make it to freak us out, just to remind us you're still here, Tony. That's interesting. Does anyone, I mean, why wouldn't we watch Cheech and Chong's Nice Dreams? Why wouldn't we go from one comedy that has not aged well to another where there's no way it has?
Let's make sure it's available in the world.
What is it called? Dreams?
Cheech and Chong's Nice Dreams.
This episode will be dropping shortly before 420.
Yeah.
So there's that.
Oh, Tony. Sly dog.
1981. It's only 88 minutes long. You can rent it on YouTube.
All
you
right.
Can get it anywhere. I came aware of them too early on because I really liked, when I was about 11, I really liked the also ran network drama Nash Bridges with Don Johnson, where Cheech Marin is the sidekick.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Someone informed me that he had a much different career 15 to 20 years earlier.
I learned that lesson from Cheech Marin being one of the hyenas in The Lion King.
Oh, yeah, he was. That's right.
So wait, y'all's individual introductions to Cheech and or Chong were
The Lion King and Nash Bridges. Yes,
actually, wasn't Cheech Marin also a voice in Oliver and Company?
Maybe.
So yeah, well, Disney movies.
Wow.
This is going to be one of our mini generation gap meaning something.
Weasels. Yeah.
Yes.
What That's could this movie be about?
Pot.
Well, yeah, that.
It's like guaranteed 100%.
Disguised as ice cream vendors, Cheech and Chong make and subsequently lose millions of dollars selling a batch of marijuana with an unusual side effect. So you were correct.
All right.
Directed by Tommy Chong. I didn't know he did the work himself. Good for him. This is not going to be good.
This is Ray Don Chong's dad.
What?
Yeah.
Wait.
Generational differences.
Wait.
Yes.
Wait. Ray Don Chong is Tommy Chong's daughter?
No.
Wait, am I wrong?
I hope so. Otherwise, I feel like I've wasted 40 years of my life not knowing that.
No, you're correct.
Okay.
Tommy Chong is her father.
Yeah.
How old is Tommy Chong? She was born in 1961.
Right?
Tommy Chong was born in 1938. He's 85.
Wow, he's much older than I thought.
Hemp has antioxidants.
Well, we'll get to that. Stick around. What a twist from Mommy Dearest to There's Something About Mary to Cheech and Chong. Let's path that course. Only through the benefit of random.org. Labor Day weekend of 1998. What was the number one song in America?
Destiny's Child.
Ooh. No.
Livin' La Vida Loca.
No. I want you to think back to the box office charts.
Oh, so Aerosmith.
Yeah.
Yeah, don't want to miss a thing.
Oh, yeah.
This is
Diane Warren.
One of Diane Warren's now 14.
That sounds about right.
Failed nominations. I mean, it's an honor just to be nominated.
Yes.
This song is the key that unlocks the puzzle box called Aerosmith sucks. Like it a lot of us are like floating on it. Oh yeah, Aerosmith, sure. Like they're just kind of there. And then if I say to you, listen, what if Aerosmith sucks, and play you I Don't Want to Miss a Thing, by the end of that song you're gonna be like, you know what, they do.
I feel like that's an indictment of Diane Warren, which I am not here for. And
it's not in the songwriting, it's in the performance.
It's in the okay. Yeah,
he doesn't have a good voice.
No.
But he does have some good songs.
I don't know.
The whole Alicia Silverstone arc.
Right. Yeah. That's where I am. Yeah. And it's Alicia Silverstone's fault. I blame her. Because those videos didn't exist, I wouldn't know anything about Aerosmith.
I still would because of Wayne's World 2. I talk about Wayne's World 2 so much on this show.